And anyone that's listening that's maybe gone through a lot of school or done something that takes a lot of time, you develop this, like, it's like a sunk cost fallacy where you're like, well, I put so much time in and money, I don't want to make a change. So I kind of lied to myself until I finally was able to realize maybe this isn't for me. And that's a tough pill to swallow when you've spent a decade getting to that point. And now you're like, well, now I have to start over if I even think about making a move.
Are you looking for freedom? Freedom from the daily grind and hustle? Or just finding a way to live the life you always wanted? Then join us on the Investing for Freedom podcast. Our host, Mike Ayala, will help you discover new ways to find freedom with tips, insights, and interviews. You'll learn the exact systems he's used to travel the world and live his best life. True success and happiness are all about freedom. And here's your roadmap on how to find freedom on your own terms. Welcome to the Investing for Freedom podcast. Here's your host, Mike Ayala.
Thank you for joining me on the Investing for Freedom podcast. I'm super stoked for this episode today because we've got a human that I've just recently met, to be honest, but I've been stalking him for a while. I've known of him because, we travel in a lot of the same circles, but Sina Getmiri is like, I'm just so excited to just dig into what him and Keshia, his wife, are doing. Just the background, which I'm not going to steal his thunder in the intro. We're just going to get into it.
Yeah.
But their story and how they kind of wove into everything and what they're doing today in real estate, I think you guys are going to be inspired by, because he was actually a dentist. And Sina, what little I know, I want to dig into, you know, some of the mindsets and the background, maybe some of the pressures that came along with being a dentist, maybe potentially some, you know, ideologies that you had with identity and maybe families and all of that. But let's get into it, man. Thanks for being on the show.
No, I appreciate you having me, and thank you for the kind words. You know, this podcast is one of the first I started listening to 2 years ago when we first got into real estate investing. So happy to be here and connect with you, obviously. And we have run in the same circles a little bit, and we finally got to meet about a month ago. So it's been great, and I'm excited for, you know, developing that relationship and to be here. But I guess high level overview, my background that Mike alluded to is I used to be a dentist, and I come from a Persian background. My family came here and I was the first generation, and I felt a little bit of inherent pressure to go do something that's respectable, right? Lawyer, doctor, engineer. Not like they told me I had to do that, but I just felt like I needed to do something that was reputable. So I picked dentist. I was doing a little bit of shadowing. I was like, okay, these guys, you know, they work 3 days a week and they golf and they make a lot of money. I'm like, this could be great. I'm built for this. And spent my 20s going through undergrad, went to dental school, did that whole thing, which was challenging on its own. And my first job outside of school, I start working, and it's at this clinic in San Diego, and they're like running me. It's like 20 patients a day, like not what I thought, not like what school was. I thought I was promised. I was like, the whole time during school, like the joke with our friends was like, once we graduate, we're going to make a crap ton of money and we're going to be set. And then you get out and it's like you hit the real world and you're like, no, it's not quite like that. You still have to earn your like rights, and like you have to put in your time and build your way up, because I was just an associate at the time. So I was like, okay, this is a little different, but let me just take my time and, you know, spent a couple years kind of adapting and learning and everything. I had a great boss outside at my first job outside of dental school. So he was teaching me the way. Finally got burnt out. It was during COVID, and they dropped my hours. I got my days cut in half in California, went from 5 days to 2 days, and so did my pay. I'm like, wait, this was supposed to be like a secure thing. And now it's, wait, what do you mean? I only get paid for 2 days now, and I don't have the ability to pick up any more hours. Luckily, my wife has a business of her own, and we were fine. Like, we could support ourselves, but it was still like, huh, okay. That was the first time I'm like, maybe this is not as secure as I thought. End up moving to Austin. To get a different job in more of a traditional clinic. Less hours, you know, not nights and weekends, 4 days a week, great pay, great staff, like everything I wanted out of what I thought the dental life was, right? Like, you know, you always joke like, oh, the dentist just walks in, looks at your mouth, walks out, and their assistants do everything else. This was that type. And I was like, okay, this is pretty good. So like making a lot of money, it's Texas, so it's no state income tax. So I got a huge bump in pay leaving California. And then after about 6 months, I was sitting there one day. I remember, I'll never forget. It was just one of those days, long day. I was like, this is not how I can't do this for 30 years. I can't show up with this type of energy for when we have kids. And as the type of husband I want to be, we weren't married at that time. I just come home exhausted. I'm like, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe this isn't my story or what I'm supposed to be doing, which is really hard to admit. And anyone that's listening that's maybe gone through a lot of school or done something that takes a lot of time, you develop this, like, it's like a sunk cost fallacy where you're like, well, I put so much time in and money, I don't want to make a change. So I kind of lied to myself until I finally was able to realize maybe this isn't for me. And that's a tough pill to swallow when you've spent a decade getting to that point. And now you're like, well, now I have to start over if I even think about making a move. So that was like the moment that I realized, hey, okay, I need to think of something different.
And you touched on this a little bit, but I'm just curious, what were the pressures? Did you have pressures from your family? How did you like navigate all of that? Because, you know, you said this in the beginning, but coming from a Persian family, the expectation, and maybe you're still navigating it, I don't know.
Telling your Persian mother you want to not be a doctor is, that was quite a battle. It comes out of love. And it wasn't, like I said, they weren't like, you have to go do this or not, but you feel that because you realize, you know, where they came from, they didn't have those opportunities during the time that they came to from Iran. So I'm like, I want to make sure that because there's sacrifice and, you know, they came here not knowing English and they learned that and navigated their way through living in a small town of Minnesota to Seattle to raise us in an area that has the ability, that has, you know, universities and the financial abilities to go to a school like that. And I was like, okay, I want to make sure I use that opportunity. So it comes from a place of love. But I didn't really think about what I wanted out of life and what the end result was going to be. There's a little bit of like image there, right? I'm a doctor, you know, I can, you know, say that there's some inherent things that people think about you when you're a doctor and you have that identity kind of wrapped up in there. But then leaving that, stripping that identity and truly asking yourself, what do you want your life to look like? What do you want it to be and how you want it to feel mostly is questions I hadn't asked myself until that moment where I was like, this can't be it for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So you've actually changed your name from Dr. Get Miri to Dr. Landlord, right?
Yeah, something like that. I don't even remember the last time someone called me doctor, but I guess I'm still a doctor technically.
I think I'm going to start calling you doctor.
I don't hate it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So as we kind of transition here, I want to, cause I think, you know, the audience in general is probably relating because it doesn't matter, you know, what our journeys are. I think what we're all really looking for is just lifestyle by design. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, cause I think sometimes, you know, we get this idea in our head, whether it's becoming a doctor, whether it's investing in real estate. Like I'm a firm believer and I've come back to this so often, even in my own life, I'm constantly checking back in with like, what do I really want and where am I on path or off path? And, you know, when I look backwards, we were talking about this off camera, but, you know, I've been involved in different businesses, different partnerships, and I've kind of come to terms with the fact that like, I'm okay with changing my path. And I think so many times people, you know, it's like you said, this fallacy of sunk costs and all of this, but I've become comfortable with who I am as an individual and just allowing myself to adjust what I wanted in a previous season might be completely different. So I'm just curious for you and Keisha, and why don't you take a second and just, you know, explain to the audience a little bit about Keisha too, because you guys are working together, which is super cool. But I'm just curious to see what kind of like the evolution was behind the scenes and what you wrestled with, lifestyle design and how you landed where you're at today.
Yeah, absolutely. So my wife, Keisha, we've been together 15 years now. And that day I had that realization at work. It was a Friday night. She's getting back from she was speaking at some event. So she got back late, maybe 9 o'clock. I was sitting at home. I had a bottle of wine. I was like, babe, we need to talk. I think I want to leave dentistry. And she is the most supportive partner I could ask for. You know, she's like, call them right now, put in your 2 weeks. I'm like, it's Friday night. I'll tell them on Monday. But she was like, yes, do it. Like, I got your back kind of thing. So she's a very supportive partner. We grew up together, you know, undergrad, leaving Seattle, living in other states together and, you know, dental school, moving around. We've lived in 5 different cities. So we've really we've really developed this like ability to change our mind, which was harder for, she's really great at that. She's good. She's really great at staying aligned of what she wants to do. And that was part of why I made the move is I saw her so excited about what she does. She has a great business. She gets to work with people she wants. She gets to choose her schedule because she's earned that right of building the business and staying aligned on what lights her up, and everything flows from there versus just chasing a goal because it's a goal, but it drains her. It's like, what I really was chasing was the energy. How do I create a life where I have the energy to do what I want? I mean, freedom's great. There's financial freedom, time freedom, all that, but it was really, you know, we had the finances. So technically that's not what we were chasing. And the freedom, it's a mixture between freedom and the energy. It's like, how am I going to be able to do something that I'm proud of and I want to work hard, but also have the ability to bring the energy to being the spouse I want to be, the friend I want to be, and eventually the father I want to be. And that's what I was really chasing and was on our mind. So I've gotten more comfortable with changing my mind because I'm a very linear thinker, you know, engineer, dentist, analytical type. I'm like point A, point B, how do I get there? You know, I can't waver, which in entrepreneurship, there's got to be a little bit of both, right? You got to have a direction, but you got to have the ability to, you know, the destination is set, but how you get there can be different. And that's really what I've learned over the past few years, jumping into this space.
You know, it's so interesting because, and I'm not saying people like thinking of, I'm thinking about myself because I get in the same rut. And I think a lot of times what you said is so powerful because, I mean, even though you guys had financial freedom, I think even a lot of times when I look backwards, even when I didn't have financial freedom going after what it was that I really wanted, like the money always comes when you're in alignment with what it is that you want. And I get into conversations all the time with people that are actually successful. I'm thinking of, you know, a person that I've had two more conversations in the last, like probably 2 weeks, similar type stories. I mean, people that are making between $500,000 and $1 million a year, and you're sitting across from them and they're like, man, I just want financial freedom. And I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Where is it?
And yeah. And I think that that's the thing that we, you know, whether it's, I want to invest in real estate because it's passive, which as you know, and we'll get into, you know, real estate's just another business. And I think we have all these ideas. It's almost like a mirage. So we have all these ideas in our head of, you know, we saw somebody else do something and then we see their lifestyle and we think that those two things are correlated, when in reality, the lifestyle is something that you design, and then the vehicle to get there can be anything that it is. And having that lifestyle design, I think, is the important part. But when I sit across from somebody and they're like, I want financial freedom. And I'm like, how much money do you make? And they're like, $1 million a year. And you have houses all over the place. And you work 20 hours a week. Like literally, I was getting ready to onboard with a coaching client. And he's just talking about how much money he makes. And he works, you know, 15 to 20 hours a week or whatever. And I'm just like, you just have to, we have to shift our thinking around this, because we're actually bored, or we lose our purpose, or we lose our passion. And it really doesn't have anything to do with money.
No, not at all. And the goal is not to sit on a beach and like, that's great for like a week, right? Like you get bored, you need to have purpose and drive. And so that's why it was like, I need to do something that lights me up so I can show up with that type of energy to, do that. And like, obviously we use real estate as a vehicle, but even within real estate, there's a ton of different ways you can go. And I think the problem I see now looking backwards and other people that say they want to get into real estate, they see what someone else is doing. They see this, the Airbnb guy, the multifamily guy, the fix and flipper, and they think they have to go do all those things. And they don't really think about their lifestyle and how does it look like. Maybe you shouldn't be buying an Airbnb because you're working already at a W-2. You don't want to take time away from your family to do that. Like there's other ways that you can invest and get caught up in thinking like, I need to do what that person's doing. I think that's a big problem going on right now.
So I'm curious, before we get into, and maybe you can just lead us into, you know, what you guys are doing and working on and where you landed, but I'm curious to just step back and through the process, how did you guys determine like why real estate? What got you lit up about real estate, and why did you choose that path?
Yeah, absolutely. So at that time, Keisha was in a mastermind, Chris Harder's mastermind. I'm sure your listeners, if they're connected with you, know him. And there's a guy in there, his name's Steve Valentine, big real estate guy out of Phoenix. And he took Keisha as kind of like little sister kind of vibes. He's a dad, you know, older gentleman, and kind of took her under his wing. And, you know, we always heard about real estate. Like, I think we could do that. We should do that. And he was explaining to us, we went to dinner one night with him, and this was before I left dentistry. And he was like kind of drawing on a napkin, like, this is what I do. Like, I buy a house and then I refinance it and I take the money and I move it here. And this is all stuff I had no idea about. I'm like, whoa, you can like take the money out, move it here, start showing us all this. I'm like, okay, I think we could do this. But I made excuses all over the place, right? I'm working. I don't have time for that. We'll eventually do that. We'll invest someday, things like that. So that was the spark that was like, I think we could do that. But I just saw the end result of the way he was doing it. And I was like, that sounds awesome, right? You have all these houses and you can pay for your lifestyle. So then months go by. And then that was when I left dentistry. I was like, I want to try real estate for 6 months. If I can't get that started, I'll go back and I'll just keep doing the dentist thing, right? Like, I have to at least give it a shot. And the day I left, I was like, there's no way I'm going back. Like, I'm going to make this work. So it was from our mentor. He was mentored us on early on in our career to give us the bug, but it developed further from there to doing other types of real estate that Steve really doesn't do, like the Airbnb space and things like that.
Yeah. So it's so interesting. And as you were saying that too, like, I could go back to dentistry. You know, I'm always looking at industries, and in reality, we can do anything we want. Like you said, if it lights you up, great, do it. But I'm always looking at demand, right? And as you said, you know, I could always go back to dentistry. Like, every single human has teeth. Yeah. Every single human needs they have a toilet, they have a furnace and air conditioner, which is the industry I came out of.
Yep.
And every single human needs shelter. Yep. And I've been thinking about this a lot, and we are going to get into what you guys are investing in, but I've been thinking about this. When you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. the basic human need is food, water, shelter.
Yep.
And so I've been wrestling with this, and I'm curious of what your thoughts are about the future of real estate, because we're in this really interesting time, which kudos to you guys, because people that got in, I started in 2007, which a lot of people would say was a rough time, but I was in this town that was a gold mining town. And so it was actually doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So I didn't really experience the crash. Not that we weren't affected, but the teens were, 2012, 2013 to 2020, oh, even 2021 were like best wild real estate times ever. Like, because knowledge, information age. Mm-hmm. So it was easy to get in. The money was easy because I say this all the time, but you know, we were just drunk on cheap money.
Yeah.
And so there were so many, you know, real estate millionaires made in the teens. Whoa, look at that.
Oh,
yeah, that was crazy.
That's right.
So many real estate millionaires made in the teens, but you guys are jumping in at a really interesting time. And I'm curious, and we can go as macro or micro as you want on this. I'm curious what your thoughts are, you know, long-term on real estate, because this is the thing that everybody's wrestling with, maybe short-term and long-term.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that, everyone in the last 10 years looks really smart. So it's like, how do you now navigate this? And it goes back to what you just said. It's, you need a place to live. Like, that's when during that COVID time, when like the metaverse and like all that stuff, like, I'm not a big crypto person. I'm not a big like online person. I like houses because you can touch them, feel them, and you have to live somewhere. Like, you're gonna live somewhere. So, and on the micro, I think it's gonna be bumpy, right? The rates are not coming down as fast as they say, but the supply is not there, and the prices, the sellers are not really budging. Like, in Denver, things are going up. They're going in 2 days, multiple offers, over ask. Like, I just see the demand is so much higher than the supply right now. And I think that's going to last for a while. I don't remember the stat, but we're X millions short on houses, and the number of starts on new builds is down in the past 10 years because builders don't want to get burned again. They got burned in 08, right? Like, so all these stats are suggesting in the short term, demand is going to stay either the same or go up. Supply is not increasing. So really, if you put those together, like we're seeing it on the ground here, like real estate's hot right now, especially in our area. And I understand there's no general statement you can make across the US, but overall, at least in our area, that's what we're feeling. So I'm very bullish on it. We're going to keep buying and doing that in the short term. Long term, you know, we'll see. Maybe they do catch up on supply, but you know, we saw population growth and things like that. So I do think it's still a great industry to get in even now. Maybe it's a little harder. There is definitely the information age, which has brought people in, but there's also a lot of misinformation going on. And I'm seeing this in the Airbnb space right now. We have a lot of hosts getting out of the game because they were promised passive income on these things. So, and that's not what it is, right? And it shouldn't be. Like, there's not many truly passive items, like investments out there. But Airbnb is definitely not one of them. And so we're seeing people leaving the space, which is going to help, you know, our business because there's going to be less hosts out there.
Yeah. You just brought up a super important point that I think people commonly overlook. And I think addressing the idea of passive income, the one thing, and it's really easy to fall into this trap. And I don't want to be the guy that said, you know, I've always known this, because when I sold my business in 2014, I had bought 45 single families. We had 5 mobile home parks, 3 commercial buildings. I say that all the time. But that was easy because I had a big company. I had a big team. I had guys when they were slow. We would remodel houses. We would, you know, I fixed my own problems because I had a cabinet company remodel. But when I sold that company, I even had the wrong idea about real estate, because even though I had that large of a portfolio, I thought it was easy. And then all of a sudden, like literally, I took my assistant from my plumbing and heating company that had been with me since 2008. And she left with me in 2014. And so I went from like over 100 employees at one point in time to 1. And then we just started managing my own properties. And I thought I was going to continue, you know, with this passive real estate investing mentality. And then when we started buying mobile home parks, like I literally woke up like 3 years later and I had like 70 employees again, which ultimately got up to almost 100 again. And I woke up one day, Sina, and I was like, oh my God, this is just another business with a different product. And I think that's what people miss out on. And you brought up such a good point with Airbnb, which by the way, I agree with you 100%. I think the same thing in the mobile home park space right now, because it got super frothy from, you know, 2018, 19, 20.
Yeah, like, it got sexy,
Totally. Yeah. And there's people that bought parks and they just thought it was going to be so easy. And same thing with Airbnb. There's people that are rushing out of it because it's not that easy. And so I do think that there's a buying opportunity. What are you seeing?
Absolutely. And real estate's funny. And you've been in obviously longer than I have, but it seems to go in these like cycles of what's hot. Like it was like mobile home parks, and then it was Airbnb, and then it's midterm rentals. And then it all kind of cycles around. And it comes from, I think, a lot of the information being put out by some of these bigger conglomerate real estate brands out there, pushing an agenda. I think these things have all been around for a while, but you see these investors flock self-storage, and then self-storage gets kind of oversupplied and then it moves on. So I totally agree. I think the people that thought that this is going to get easy are now going to go through a couple of years of it being tough, whether it's mobile home parks, self-storage, Airbnb. And the ones that I think can put in the effort and the time and to really make it work are going to see the fruits of the labor. Like we're seeing it now on Airbnb. Last year, man, we were, by this time, we were booked through the summer with rates that were crazy. Now it's half that. We'll book, and I feel good about it because we target a specific niche, but the traveling patterns are different for people. They're booking closer to their, you know, arrival date. You know, last year was like 6 months out. Now it's down to like 3 months out, which is fine. But there's people that I know in this space that are barely breaking even as an Airbnb. And what's coming down the path for Colorado, which, I mean, we'll see if it passes. They want to raise our property tax by 4 times if you're an Airbnb, 4x it. So 400% raise in your property tax if you're an Airbnb. So they want to treat us like hotels because they want to like they're not very Airbnb friendly here. So between the regulation and the demand for the Airbnbs, you really have to be on your game. You can't just let your house be, you know, kind of let it go and not update it and not provide the amenities and not provide the hospitality. Like, it's a business. You have to stay on top of it. You got to have your pricing dialed in, your cleaning team dialed in, your maintenance team dialed in. You can't let things go because they're going to go, people are just going to go to the better houses. Like, that's just what's happening. And the people that think it's passive and they can just like let it ride, you're going to see your income start dwindling down. And we're just seeing that. I see that firsthand right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's the important part with real estate. And, you know, I do another podcast with a group of guys called the King's Table. And one of the things that I've been thinking about for a while, and we discussed on a show a few weeks back, but I think the thing that people need to understand is, you know, when I was in the plumbing and heating business, it was easy to adjust. If we have a downturn, you know, you maybe have to let some employees go, you increase revenue, you increase marketing, which some of that can be done with Airbnb. But generally speaking with real estate, and I don't think people think about this enough, it's a long game. It's not that there's not a lot of liquidity. What we love about real estate is the appreciation component, the depreciation component when it comes to taxes, the ability to leverage. Those are all the good things that everybody talks about. But what nobody talks about is when things get challenging, not very liquid. And usually when you need liquidity, it's because things are challenging and nobody wants what you have unless you're willing to discount it. And so I think people really need to be thinking about that, because as much as I love real estate, the thing that I've realized and learned, it literally took me, you know, probably 15 years in real estate to fully comprehend this. We can't move very fast. Like you can't adjust very well. And so, you know, all the things that you talked about, I think are very, very important. You know, you were at our investor dinner a couple of weeks ago and Ken McElroy was there, and I was talking with Ken, and he thinks, and if you look at the stats on this, I mean, NAR says that we're 6 million units short. They have an incentive to say that. So I don't know if it's 6 million units, but, but the one thing that I'm pretty convinced of is that we've never caught up, as you said, we've never caught up with supply, I think, since 2008. And when you bring it back to what I said earlier about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, basic human need, shelter. Here's one thing, a thought that I've had and been kind of pondering recently, and I'll kick it back to you after I kind of just share this. I actually think that we're in this season of time. You know, if you look at the S&P 500 and you look at businesses, I mean, real estate's flat compared to what it was, but it's still way up. And I don't think we're going to have a huge drop here. I really don't. For the reasons that you said. But when I think about the fundamentals around this, I actually have a little bit of a contrarian view, because I think the people that are going to struggle are actually businesses, because I think when you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, basic human need, food, water, shelter, and I've said this forever, you know, air conditioning, heating, real estate, food. I actually think that we're starting to see, I mean, even when you look at credit card usage and all of that, I think we're going to start seeing a period of time. It takes us a year or two as humans to really accept the situation that we're in and then adjust our habits and patterns. And I think a lot of people are starting to understand, I think we're in a new normal. I do not believe interest rates are going back to 3 or 4%. I did a prediction. I think they're going to be, at best case scenario, probably, you know, I said 6.25% by the end of the year. And we're starting to see some of this play out. Everybody's holding on to the Fed. But in reality, I think when you come out of a period of time like we've came out of, we can't use history as a marker, because the government has never been here. And the other thing that people always talk about too is, you know, the government doesn't want interest rates high because then they have to pay back their debt at a higher interest rate. They're not paying back their debt. So we're living in a completely new time where the fundamentals have completely changed. And here's, I'll pull this back to real estate and then kick it to you. So I actually think we're living in a period of time where it's taken us a couple years to get our brain around this. And now people are going to start cutting costs, but I don't think it's going to be in housing. And one of the problems that we have right now is housing prices have escalated, which really it's just because the purchasing power of the dollar has completely fell off a cliff. Houses aren't expensive. The dollar sucks. And we're just not seeing that in the dollar index because it's, you know, it's the world currency. But in reality, the purchasing power of the dollar sucks. And yeah. rents haven't caught up yet, but they will catch up. They have to. Mm-hmm. And I think where people are going to cut costs is not in their rents. And they're not going to lose their houses unless it's the last thing they do. And so they're going to start cutting. They're going to start spending less on iPhones. They're going to start spending less on, you know, memberships and subscriptions and all the things that have been, I guess, just a distraction. Because what's your biggest cost? Taxes and housing. Mm-hmm. And so everybody focuses on that. But the reality is they're going to start cutting everywhere else. And they're going to pay their rent because that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So what say you?
Yeah, I mean, spot on, right? Like, I think if COVID taught us anything, is your house is now your new environment, right? Like, we're at home a lot. And I don't think people want to sacrifice where they want to live. And especially with the ability of people moving around more, and they're going to want the house they want. And let me give you an example is we rented up until last April, where we bought a primary home. And that's only because we got pregnant and we wanted a home base. And it was in that moment I realized, oh, like, we're going to do whatever we have to do to get a house. Like, it doesn't matter the price, the time, or the interest rate. I was like, this, because we just kept investing as we rent because we didn't want to use all our capital to get it tied up in a primary. We're like, let's just build our portfolio that can then fund our primary home eventually. And I was like, well, once we're pregnant and starting a family, we're going to do whatever we can to get a house. And I think, I don't remember the stat, but, you know, the millennials are now in like the childbearing age, right? Every day, like, there's more and more families being formed and they're going to go get the house that they want. And we're seeing this right now with our fix and flip side of the business with our partner, is houses are going in 2 days to families that want, you know, a primary suite. They want 4 bedrooms. They need an office. They need a baby room. Like, these are things on the ground that we're seeing. So for that reason alone, I think the supply isn't going to increase because there's enough people buying to take whatever's coming on the market off. So, like, I agree. I don't think there's going to be a big crash. I think we've actually already bottomed out whatever little dip there was. And as soon as I think we see the low sixes on rates, it's a new normal. Like you said, we're going to be okay. Admit to ourselves that 5% is not coming back. Maybe high fives, maybe, but the 6% is going to be normal. And I'm ready to go buy a house now instead of sitting on the sidelines. And for all those reasons, I don't see housing crashing. And I think we're going to see another run here, whether it's this year or next year, but sometime within the next few years. That's just my belief on that.
Yeah. Because you're, you know, investing in Airbnb, I'm not a big Airbnb investor. I invest in affordable housing, but there's on my, I guess, thought process of, you know, people cutting costs. One thing that Kara and I know you and Keisha kind of, you know, subscribe to this too. You can hear it in the way you guys talk and the life you live. Kara and I have always said that we want to put relationships, experiences, and memories above everything else. Mm-hmm. And I have learned and do believe that you can have money and all of that and relationships, experiences, and memories. But that being said, I actually think that the future of Airbnb is actually pretty bright because, you know, you said this, there's some problems and all the naysayers want to say what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. But the problem really exists from people rushing in and poor operators, not treating it as a business, like we talked about earlier, because people think they're just going to get in. And, you know, a lot of these mom and pop investors, they don't do a good job of building the business around it. And so I'm a firm believer, whether it's a real estate agent that has some challenges ahead, whether it's legal firms that have challenges because of AI, or whether it's an Airbnb operator, the best of the best are going to survive. And so the future for me, even based on, you know, what I was saying, I think is pretty bright because after food, water, shelter, I think people really do value experiences and travel and all of that. And so I'm not saying that, you know, maybe everything doesn't get cut to some level as we start seeing challenges. Because the one thing we're convinced of is, like, wages haven't kept up with inflation. We all know that. So people do have to cut somewhere. But I think if people are looking at, oh, I can spend $1,000 on an iPhone, or I can put that toward half of a vacation, what are they going to do? They're going to keep their iPhone. They just haven't gotten to the point where they're thinking about that yet. So I am still a fan of Airbnb. And I think long-term, because of our habit changes, it's going to do well. Do you agree, disagree, have further thoughts on that?
Spot on. Operators that think that they could just throw up grandma's couch again, like 2020, they're done. I'll give you an example. We bought our second Airbnb, was a functioning Airbnb. Like, it was on the market. And the way I found it was, first it was on Zillow, and I looked for like price cuts and things like that to find motivated sellers. And I saw this guy, I could tell he bought it to fix it up, overfixed it, can't sell it, went to rent, couldn't rent it. And I was like, this guy's definitely on Airbnb. So I go look at his Airbnb calendar, definitely find it. It's empty. And I know exactly why. Like, he didn't design it. There's no experience. Like, there's no, like, he didn't do any market research on amenities that everyone around him has. So I would say he's, you know, his monthly payment to the bank was probably, I don't know, $5,000. He definitely wasn't even making that. Like, I was like, there's no way. We end up buying the house. We totally change everything. Like, we bought our first Airbnb about a year and a half ago, and designed it for like girls retreats, for Keisha's community to come over, and bachelorette parties, kind of girls weekends, things like that. Absolutely just takes off because we cater to that. I'm like, okay, let's go do another one. So we were looking for a house, and this is the one we found. And like, well, let's just create that experience even more for those, that type of demographic that's coming here for their girls weekends, bachelorette parties, things like that. So we, you know, everything about the design, the couches, the houses or the beds, everything like that is catered to bachelorette parties. And that house went from probably, he was probably doing 40K a year top on Airbnb. It's on pace for like 165 to 170 this year. But that's because we're creating an experience, right? And now it's getting even tougher that we're hiring this girl can plan the weekend for them. We're providing extra services, right? We can decorate the house for you. We can stock the fridge. We can, set up shuttles for you. We can, you know, create experiences for you. That's what you have to do to compete at this level right now. That space is so professionalized that if you think you can just throw up some furniture and call it good, you're in for, it's going to be a world of hurt. And that's just the way it is. You have to hire a designer. You have to buy nice furniture. Your bedding has to be good. Like, the details that it takes, it's very fruitful. Like, you can do very well in Airbnb. And I see that happening more. Like, look at the revenue. Airbnb stock is up. Go look at it. Like, the problem is there's just so many hosts, and those are dwindling by the day, especially with regulation coming down in cities. And the ones that are losing money are finally going to be like, I'm done. I need to sell. And we're seeing that. We work with a brokerage that specializes in selling Airbnbs. And she, our friend, brings us off market Airbnbs all the time of hosts that are like, I don't want to do this anymore. I thought it was going to be passive. I'm not making enough money. I want out. So it's going to take a little bit of time for that, the supply of hosts to come down. But I think long term, we're very bullish on it. But we're just taking a little bit of a, not a pause, but like, it has to be the right deal for the next one, because there is some, a little bit of a dip in demand right now.
Yeah. So what else are you guys investing in?
Yeah. So we've bought, our first purchase was a long-term rental in Phoenix, and it was just very straightforward. Our mentor brought it to us, was able to connect us with the seller. And we did that, which got us in the game. And what I like to stress a lot to anyone that maybe hasn't gotten started in Airbnb, I think too many people, or not, are in their investing journey, too many people get caught up in needing it to be like a home run deal, right? Mm-hmm. Our first one is not a home run. It's a long-term rental. At the time we bought it, it cash flowed like $400 a month. We had to put 20% down, but we were able to get in the game and get over the fear of starting. And we attribute that house to being like the catapult that took us on our journey. So what I tell people is like, find a property that works. It doesn't have to be a home run. You're not going to build, you don't have the confidence yet to take a big swing. Go do that, build up the confidence, get the house, and then go get the next one, because it's so much easier after the first one. So we went from that. Then we bought a quadplex on seller finance, got a really good note, and we run midterm rentals out of there, like corporate housing. So we bought it, renovated it, set it up for like traveling nurses, corporate professionals, things like that. People coming to Denver to stay for a couple months. And that one's doing pretty well too. And then bought our first Airbnb a couple weeks later. 6 months later, bought our third property, which is our second Airbnb. And then those Airbnbs are catered to bachelorette parties, girls' weekends. So we have that niche really dialed in. And then we just are about to launch our third Airbnb, which is an A-frame cabin. Should be done in a couple weeks to
That's cool.
Get that one up. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I don't know if you know this, but Egon Durbin, I think is his name, from Silver Lake Capital, he took a huge stake in Airbnb. And I think it was actually April of 2020. And there's a saying, you know, wow, success leaves clues.
Yeah.
So Silver Lake Capital is one of the, you know, the most successful PE firms that's ever existed. And this was not really well known, I think, because it was right when COVID was starting. So, you know, people weren't paying attention. But when somebody like Durbin gets into something, like, dude, you got to know that the future is bright. And so I think it's fine. I think the point that you made, you know, there's going to be some challenges. Interesting. You were talking earlier about the amount of money and time and the sunk cost fallacies of getting a dental degree. But then you bring it to today and you were such valuable wisdom on, you know, just getting started and people looking for home runs. Durbin actually says, we don't focus on home runs. We do singles and doubles. Mm-hmm. And then we get to third, and then, or then we steal third, and then we make it home on a pass ball. That's like his whole investing philosophy.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah. So good. Okay. Let's wrap this up. So I have loved watching you guys. You mentioned briefly, you got pregnant. Let's talk for a minute about the work life travel integration with the child, because I've been watching you guys and it's super cool.
Yeah, that's been the coolest part. So he's 4 months now. And why I sat there that day after work and I was like, I can't do this anymore, is because I was thinking ahead to a time like this where, how is this even going to be possible when we have a kid? Like, my father and I had a tough relationship. Like, he wasn't a bad person. We just didn't have the relationship that I wanted as a kid, like the father son, that ideal relationship, like the way you have it with your kids. Like, that's what I was craving. And he had his own challenges, not a bad person. Just, we didn't have that. So I'm like, I want to be different in that sense. But I also want to do something successful as well. So it was like, I need to figure out how to blend those both together to be able to be present when we have a kid. And then also a business that can support a lifestyle that we want. And it's cool now because we've set up the systems and the journey. You know, I mentioned all those places we bought, and there's a lot of time and energy and money that went to getting that optimized. But I wouldn't trade those last 2 years of the hard work and everything that we had to do, and the unknown, the uncertainty, the feeling like what the heck am I doing? Like, I just spent so much money on this place. We need to renovate it. All these things that go through your head as a new investor, and the confidence it takes, or the time it takes to build the confidence to get to this point. But now it's like, we've been able to design exactly what we want. So for example, we don't do anything before 10 a.m. Like, we do our morning walk as a family. We have breakfast together. We don't take calls or meetings before 10 a.m. Unless there's one-off circumstances we have to, obviously, we can adjust. But overall, we're able to like build that lifestyle, which is so cool because we have that base of income coming in, and we're going to keep growing and building and doing cool things. But what we really try to create is like bookends of our day to be able to have that time together. I can't imagine if I was still a dentist waking up at 6 a.m. and leaving to go to work. It's like after a night of like, you know, not a lot of sleep sometimes. And, you know, the pressure would go on to Keisha if that was the case. And then things get rocky between, you know, our relationship. We're not able to divvy up responsibilities as equally because it's already weighted so much towards the mother during the early years. You know, I try to take as much off as I can. and then our relationship could sacrifice, right? So it's like cool to be in a time where we're seeing that come to fruition. And it just makes me even more excited to, now we're thinking, okay, when we want to have another kid and we're going to have two kids and they're going to be 5 and 6, the years you start really remembering those times you have with your family. It's okay, now we're thinking about 5, 6 year goals of how do we get more passive? You know, it's, these things are great now. I love doing them. Like the Airbnbs, it's totally fine. They run pretty well now, you know, a couple hours a week. But what's our next 5 years look like? Like, what do we want it to be when the our version of freedom, when the kids are in those years where they're formative, right? They remember family trips and just you being there, because neither Keisha and I really had that unique dynamic family, like the typical family unit. So that's where we're at now, of like, we're trying to figure out, okay, what does that look like in 5, 6 yeah. years? What do we want to do now to set us up to have that freedom and lifestyle that we want?
That's so cool, man. Well, I'm a fan. You guys are just both awesome and just love the whole story and what you're building. So any way I can support, and we'll have you back on like in a year and we'll just decompress where we're at. So
yeah,
where can people find, where can people find you? Just tell us how to connect.
Absolutely. Easiest way is Instagram. It's Sina.getmiri. And then my wife and I, Keisha, have a podcast, Get Investing. Mike was just on, so go check it out. His episode was great. But I appreciate you having me on and hope this was valuable for your listeners. You know, reach out anytime. I'm an open book if anyone wants to know anything or whatever that is.
Thanks for being on the show, man.
Appreciate it.
If you've found value in this episode and you know someone who's wanting to start or move further along in their journey toward investing for freedom, I would be forever grateful if you would share this show with them and help me get this message out to more listeners. Also, if you enjoy what you've heard, I would appreciate it if you'd take 30 seconds and leave me a 5-star review and share this with your friends. And until the next episode, cheers to moving further along in your journey of investing for freedom.